Might have been someone in the ladies' room.
Anyone still in there from the time of the long chill would have had the worst case of shit block in the history of the fucking world.
There was nobody there, nor in the workshop. In the dim half-light of the gathering dusk, they could see that all the tools had been removed from their places on long wooden racks. The floor was stained with long-dried pools of lube oil. The five companions stood for several long, silent moments.
Shame it's empty.
You were hoping for a mint-conditioned Cadillac with velvet upholstery, all greased and ready to drive away?
Ryan's grin spread when the armorer threw him the finger.
Let's go back now. This place smells deader than a beaver hat. Keep a single guard, tight perimeter outside.
Sure. Could do with a fire in here. A couple of broken windows up high will take out smoke.
From one of his sewn pockets, Jack removed some matches, dry-sealed. But there was precious little wood to burn. Outside, there were some sizable branches that would go well once they had a fire blazing, but they needed some kind of kindling. Laurie pointed to an old calendar on the office wall above the till. The years had bleached away its color, but it still showed the month of January 2001.
A small token of appreciation to Greenwich Pass Service Station from the suppliers of Exodus Power Tools.
There was a sepia picture of the interior of a Victorian mansion on it. Doc stood in front of it, and Ryan joined him.
Thinking how well that had burned, Doc?
To his surprise, he saw that the old man was weeping, silent tears coursing through the gray stubble on his lined cheeks.
Hey, Doc. What's wrong?
What's up, Doc? It's what you should say, Ryan. That was the old joke. Buggy the Bunny, he was called. Something like that. I am truly sorry. You must forgive an old fool's streak of maudlin sentimentality. It's the picture.
You mean like wanting old times back?
More than you know, my dear fellow. Oh, more than you know. That picture brings back such a flood of memories. Oh, the days and evenings with dear Emily.
Who's Emily? They were alone. The others were scavenging around outside before darkness made it too dangerous to move in the open. Ryan looked up at the calendar, wondering what had triggered the reaction in the old-timer. The calendar had a name on it, Courier and Ives. There was a large fireplace in the print, with logs blazing merrily in it, and there was a pine tree in a tub, decorated with ornamental candles, in a way that seemed dangerous to Ryan. Pretty parcels were scattered around the bottom of the tree, each wrapped in bright paper and tied with ribbons of silk. The mantle was busy with vases and spelter statues of men on horseback, and over the mantle was a large painting. When Ryan peered more closely at the painting, he saw that it was a reproduction of the main picture, a fireplace with a tree in a tub, and over the mantle was a picture of a room with a fire and a tree, and a picture over the mantle. Doc Tanner was close at his elbow, looking at the way each painted image was reproduced and diminished, drawing the eye in and in and in through each miniature until the detail blurred.
Who is Emily, Ryan?
Yeah. Heard you mention the name before this, Doc. Someone you know?
I knew her, Ryan. A woman of excellent wit and beauty. One day I will tell you, but not now. It was this picture. I can hear those logs as they crackle and spit, smell the freshness of the pine needles, hear the excited laughter of young children as they wait to open the presents the jolly St. Nicholas has sent them. The family parlor at Christmas. Damp moss and dry leaves, belladonna, macassar oil and parsley, peppermint oil and ipecac for those who had dined well but not wisely upon the turkey and the plum pudding.
There were fresh tears again, glistening on his cheeks. Embarrassed by this flood of memories, Ryan turned to look out the broken panes of glass to where the rest of the group was gathering wood to burn. And yet Ryan was still deeply puzzled by the things Doc had said. Things that Ryan had never known. Things that seemed to him to come from such an antique past that it wasn't conceivable that Doc Tanner could recall them from personal memory. It wasn't possible. Despite all their efforts, the fire was proving stubborn to light. Most of the wood was damp and green, and nearly all the kindling they found was also wet. At Christie's suggestion, they tried the calendar, though Doc Tanner came close to objecting. But the card proved too thick to do more than lie there sullenly smoldering.
How about that?
Jack Lauren pointed to the wood-framed counter that was built into the wall.
Break it up, Whitey. Give it plenty of fucking boot and it might splinter dry.
The skinny little youth walked up and patted the solid structure, running his hands over it and testing the thickness of the wood and the amount of give when he leaned on it. He took a couple of paces back, closing his pink eyes for a moment in concentration. The other six watched him closely. Ryan in particular was fascinated that such a frail body could harness such devastating power. It wasn't anything mystical, in the way that Christie could fold her mind inward and draw on the force of the Earth Mother Gaia. This was simply a great skill. Jack gave a single explosive grunt and lashed out with his foot. The whole front of the counter caved in, splitting lengthways as if a chainsaw had ripped through it. Without a pause, like a dancer, Jack wheeled on the other foot and kicked again. This time, the entire left side fell away from the wall, leaving only one part still attached. A third kick demolished that.
Yeah! Fucking fan-fucking-tastic! This'll burn real good!
What's that?
Where?
JB moved to help Finn clear away the shattered splinters.
There! The hole in the wall. It was hidden before by the wood.
The armorer stepped over the wreckage of the counter and stooped where the girl was pointing. Then he spotted the shadowy hole that was no bigger than a couple of house bricks.
Something here.
What?
Box. No, a tin, Ryan.
Could be booby trap, JB. Watch it.
Too well hid. Looks like it's been here since the big fires.
He eased the tin box from its hiding place and laid it on the floor near the shards of wood. They gathered around it, their need for a fire momentarily forgotten. Even though the temperature had fallen so fast and so low that the gas station seemed filled with the mist of their warm breath.
Got a lock.
Ah, blast the bastard apart. One round from the bread will open it up like cracking an egg.
Why not just try and lift the lid first?
It was open. JB looked inside, then handed it to Jack.
Here, kid. You found it. You can have it.
He winked over his shoulder at Ryan.
I saw it.
I split it with you, Laurie.
The albino carried it to where the poor fire coughed and spluttered fitfully. It was the only light they had, apart from the pallid moon that sailed above them in a sky speckled by the remains of the chemstorm.
What is it?
It was a wad of paper, a couple of hundred small sheets, around 5 inches by 3, with the rotted remains of an elastic band around them. Jack took them out, riffling them through his fingers. Dust flew off their edges. Ryan suddenly guessed what it was.
Open them up.
Pictures. Pictures and numbers. I can do numbers. There's a 10, and that's a 100, and a 20, and another 10.
Shh, it's old Jack. Seen lots around West Lowellton. Left around, in wallets and pockets and bags. Dollars, isn't that right?
Sure is, son. Must be a tidy nest egg there. Close on $5,000. Cheating the tax department, I guess.
Not worth shit now.
Wrong, Fats. Watch this.
Jack took the handful of dry paper to the dying fire and poked it on, putting some of the broken wood of the old counter on top of it and adding a few of the smaller green branches. He was right. The pile of money burned wonderfully well. Ryan awoke during the night and saw that the fire was dying. He rolled out from under his coat, tossed a couple more branches on the glowing ashes, and watched as the dry wood began to burn. From out in the clutching darkness beyond the frail walls of the gas station came the keening wail of a hunting animal. Probably some sort of mountain lion was Ryan's guess. As he was sliding back to sleep, he heard a snuffling sound near the door, as if some large creature was moving there, having caught the scent of humans. Finnegan, who was on sentry watch, came in from the office area and saw that Ryan was awake. He moved to kneel beside him.
Biggest fucking bear I ever seen out there. Must stand close to 6 feet at the shoulder. Only got to lean on us, and this place had folded like a fucking pack of cards.
Want me to get up, Finn?
Nah, I'll chill out if it starts to get too curious about us.
He stood up again.
Know what you call a 3,000-pound mutie grizzly?
No.
Sir.
They were up at first light, bundling themselves into their furs and huddling against the bitter cold that frosted the ground outside. Thick slate-gray ice covered the puddles of water lying in the rutted mud. There was a fresh dusting of snow on the upper slopes of the mountains around them. Doc Tanner cupped his hands and blew on them to try to get some warmth into his aged bones.
Which way?
North, where that radio message came from. You never know what it could lead to.
The blacktop was cracked and showed signs of some major earth movements many years ago. Weeds peeked through the cracks and gaps, and the shoulders crumbled away into the earth around them. Every now and again they found places where mountain streams came rushing over sections of the two-lane highway, washing them out, and carrying debris toward the river at the bottom of the valley. The road twisted and turned, gradually descending and revealing more and more of the long, wide lake to the right. They passed a sign, leaning drunkenly, pointing back the way they'd come. Klamath Falls 17, it read.
Nice to know where we've been, lover. All we need to know now is where we're going.
Lori was leading them, striding at a moderate pace, her silver spurs tinkling brightly in the cool morning air. The camstorms of the previous evening had disappeared, and the sky was again the unusual blue that Ryan remembered from the pictures in old magazines. At a hairpin curve to the left, Lori paused and stared intently into the valley.
There's a vill there!
The others joined her to see where she was pointing. A large collection of buildings was scattered around a central road, with three or four side roads branching off it. The town, which seemed to run down to the edge of the lake, contained around 200 to 300 houses. Part of it was obscured by the edge of a bluff, protruding on their right.
One of the biggest vills I've seen for a while. Can't recall seeing any big place in these parts on the old maps.
Could be a new place. Some sprung up where the old vills got chilled by the nukes. Best step light and find out who the Baron is down there. Make sure we get a friendly welcome.
They all looked at the sign. Ginsburg Falls. Population 8,407. Altitude 4,950. Printed neatly beneath that, in dark blue and gold paint in an elegant sans-serif type, were the words, "Walk the line, and you'll be fine."
A stout right-wing statement, I dare say. It sets well with happiness being a warm gun and telling folks to either shape up or ship on out.
That's a big population.
Yeah. From higher up, we couldn't see the whole vill. There's hundreds more houses on that strip development to the west across from the lake. Laid out like a square grid.
Gotta be one of the biggest vills I've ever seen. But it doesn't look like it's military. No electric fences, nothing like that.
Maybe it's just left behind. Kinda shut away after the long winters and running all along on its fucking ownsome. You figure?
Let's go find out.
This blacktop's been swept clean.
Jibby paused when they were still a good half mile from the nearest building. Christie smiled uncertainly.
Yeah, it has. There's dried leaves lying all around, but the road's virtually clear of them. I never heard of a vill that's as clean as that.
Neither have I. Most vills, you can smell them before you see them.
I hear something coming. Small wagon, gas power. Like one of the swamp bugs. Lighter sound to the engine.
The wind was blowing toward the vill, making it hard to hear anything from that direction. But within seconds, they all heard the whining sound of a small, powerful engine approaching quickly. Each of them saw it at the same moment, breasting a rise in the road, a couple of hundred yards ahead. It was a small open wag, like a jeep, painted light blue. Four men were seated in it, all holding blasters.
Easy. Nothing hasty or foolish. Could bring the whole vill down on us. Just keep ready.
Winchester carbines. Selective fire, M2 models, 30 caliber. Look at the polish on them.
The guns glittered with a parade ground patina, reflecting the dazzling sun. The jeep stopped in a squeal of brakes about 50 yards away. Three of the men leaped out, forming a skirmishing line across the center of the road. The driver moved to the back, swinging around a mounted machine gun. Ryan recognized the blast.